Welcome to Vice or Virtue, an Aggie pod where Aggie fans talk about Aggie jams. We are going to talk today on episode 5 about March 14th and 15th at Nectar's up in Burlington, Vermont. Welcome back to the podcast, Al W., the inaugural guest. And we did a great episode back then. Al, how are you? You were up at these shows, so I'm so tickled to talk to you. And we're going to use your odds to help talk about the music.
Oh yeah, it's great to be here, and it was really fun to go up to those shows at Nectar's. I was fortunate enough to see the band play there last summer as well, and that was a really fun show. First time I'd ever been to Nectar's, which is obviously pretty well known, I guess, in the community. Way smaller than I expected. It's only about 220, 250 people, and these shows were sold out, which is pretty cool.
Very cool, and they were also doing a test video stream, live stream on YouTube those nights. And that was really kind of a fun experience to be able from home here in Las Vegas to watch the shows as they were happening. You got a sense for how small the room is, kind of how dark the room is. You caught some really, really big shows. I know we try not to go into anything with expectations, but if I had to characterize these shows in a word, it would be deep, because the jams just went and went and went, and like no time wasted.
I think both nights there was definitely a sense of that like intense full club energy, right? Sometimes, you know, you play outdoors and there's a certain vibe, or you play, you know, the last time we talked, it was in this kind of cavernous brew hall situation, which is really cool. And then now at Nectar, it was warm. You know, it's cold outside, but I wore shorts to the shows because I was like, I know I'm going to be too hot. And I was right. It was pretty hot and intense. And I guess the band was kind of relentless across the two nights, right? The level all the way up to, you know, like the very last note of both shows. I think it was like, we're gonna throw everything at these two shows. But no, it was intense and really, really enjoyable.
Set one, way less. I thought the move into Backyard Bear was pretty slick late into the song, and key change was nice and smooth. And Backyard Bear, and it's very typical early set one spot. I'm sure they'll never take Backyard Bear deep, right? They would never jam it for 25 minutes early in a set two. Oh wait, they'll do that in Ardmore just a couple of nights later. It was great. I thought the vocal harmonies in Backyard Bear were especially smooth.
I do want to call it Last Akin as well, because they've been playing that a bit more, I guess, unjammed. What's the right way to put it, right? Like kind of condensed or straight, I guess. And they actually posted a video on YouTube of a version from a few shows ago that was like really, really punchy and to the point. One of my favorite songs. They played it kind of the same way. And I really liked where it sat in the set after that kind of interesting excursion through Backyard Bear. We've got the punchy Last Akin. Punchy you as well. And then, yeah, you know, this very bouncy tune and Ruben and Sharice.
This really starts to go, you know, shout out to Alex for his little woodblock type fills early in this song, around 4 minutes. I love, and this is really, I thought, what the best part about the Ruben and Charisse jam was, how Jake incorporates the Ruben and Charisse theme into the peak of the jam. Yeah. I thought that was really, really impressive, because it's one thing to just dip right back into the melody and everyone goes back into that playing the song mode. But it didn't feel like they did that here.
Yeah, it was like the melody was like floating on top kind of, right, of the jam. But I liked it was all four players doing their own thing, but in a very cohesive way, which I feel like I'm starting to see a lot of this year, where you listen over here and something's going on over here, you listen over there, something's going on over here, and you kind of see it all fit together. In the room, people were really paying attention. People had already been paying attention. I'm not, but like, all there was a noticeable kind of focus towards, okay, yeah, like, we're in business. And obviously, like, cover like this is going to get people's attention in a bit of a different way. What was kind of cool here is the Ruben and Charisse part, kind of like that jamming part, finished. It was very kind of ethereal, like peaky waves, kind of like floating over the waves kind of vibe. Yeah, I'm waving my arm. Not great for an audio podcast, but
we know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. And then it all kind of went like, almost not a record scratch, not quite that sudden, but like everyone stopped playing. And then like, where do we go from here, right? And Jake gets into the, like, a riff mode, and it was in the key for Waylist. And I'm like, okay, sometimes I have these moments where I'm like, is this a cover? Like, are we doing a cover? Are we doing a tease of some obscure to me, at least, 70s or 80s? Song that the band has yet to introduce me to, and I spent about a minute going like, is this riff? What's this riff? I don't think it was anything I was supposed to recognize, and then it materialized into Waylist, and or into that key, I guess, which was kind of cool. So a little bit of a bonus jam, and I love that, like, set sandwich. You can't go wrong, right?
Right. Start with Waylist, finish with Waylist. Yeah, I was, by the end of the Waylist jam, I mean, they toss in 12 pounds of pain teas around 21 minutes.
Oh yeah,
for the audience recording tracking that you did. Thank you again. Well done. And I was getting like a piano bar kind of vibe as the whole song started to peak around 22 minutes. And I really like how Alex used his snare as we're getting into another little peak to get back into the chorus of Waylist to wrap the whole set. Don't waste any time after set break, opening with Sweat Equity. Donnie is playing this almost harpsichord-esque sort of patch on one of his keyboards around 13 minutes. To my ears, that's kind of a new sound that I don't know if I had necessarily noticed before. Then with those tones, they go into almost a James Bond kind of vibe in the middle of Sweat Equity.
Definitely what it reminded me of in the moment.
Every once in a while, it's like, wait, is this the theme from SWAT? Is this Mission Impossible? No, I'm thinking of myself playing GoldenEye in middle school. This is the 007 theme, but I thought it was really cool.
It was totally James Bond in a great way. The bass groove is fantastic. It's really upbeat. I described it in a text to a friend as, I think it was this song, as disco Pink Floyd.
Mm.
Although I think you could apply that to a couple of jams over the weekend, disco Pink Floyd. This was kind of foreshadowing for several moments, I think, across the two shows. I keep saying weekend, but the two shows, about being comfortable grabbing a groove and then sitting in that groove and really like really kind of mining that groove or that melody to a great conclusion without, because, you know, sometimes just because of the nature of this beat, you have a groove or something like that, and you end up kind of finding your way around it and it never quite lands. And that's the risk you take, right? It's really, really hard to do this. But as I said in the last podcast, in all of these scenarios, I'm also thinking of like Hux from The Next Night. You get these grooves where you're sitting in the groove. And I think that's why, like, when you're in the room, it's really this communal experience between everybody, right? The level of focus and kind of communication between the band and the audience is we're in this moment and we kind of want this moment to keep on going. It's almost like you're bouncing the energy back and forth between the band and the audience. And that was definitely what was going on here.
We get a couple more really big jams here, Here and Now, and Kiss from a Rose, Evergreen in between. But both of these jams structurally had some similarities that even a dumb guy like me was like, hey, I see what you're doing here, and I see what you're doing over here. But those just big picture similarities, kind of rocking early, would be like part one of the jam. Part two would be a patient groove. A feel-good groove in the context of Here and Now, but just being content to explore. And then all of these jams, Here and Now and Kiss from a Rose, kind of finish with some complex melodic work or go into more of a beautiful melodic sort of a rapping jam. But I mean, if you're going to rock early and then groove and then do something pretty at the end, like that's a 20, 25 minute jam that even before I've heard it, I'm already excited about. And to see that format a couple times over in set two, I thought was just emblematic of how deep they were getting. nice kind of rock riff by 7 minutes from Jake, and the band is building around that. That's part of that early rocking sort of thing I was talking about. Donnie's B3 keys kind of helping go from staccato clav over to the B3 to spread things out. And then things almost get to a pivot point of quiet around 17 minutes. I'm sure that, you know, when it sounds quiet on the tape, probably sounded pretty quiet in real life. What were the vibes like during this jam?
That is one of the interesting things about taping, is that it can, just because of the way microphones are supposed to pick up sound, right? So they're going to try their best to pick up sound. And sometimes you have moments that are actually quieter in the room than they sound, end up sounding on the tape. And it's so, like, to your point, if it's quiet on the tape, then you know it was really quiet in the room. And it was pretty noticeable, the level of intent on both the audience and the on the band side here. There was a sound, you mentioned some of Donnie's synth sounds, and there's this interesting like hissing snake sound that comes at 11:20.
He does have some synth washes that I feel like we haven't heard before. You know, it's always interesting hearing these new sounds because, yeah, you never know, you know, where they're gonna turn up. I was really, really, really into the third part of the Here and Now jam.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it goes from being super quiet and spacey and spare, and then it leads into this gorgeous passage. Reminded me of the July 21st, 1999, My Left Toe Jam that Phish did in Star Lake. That was my first Phish show. It's always been a favorite jam, but it just kind of emerges from the muck and from the noise in that case. But from this instance, we are kind of in that spacey sound, but really feels like we're pushing into new territory, or at least to my ears, it kind of did. And I loved how they're getting back into the here and now sort of theme or melody as like a lifeline, as somewhere to kind of point the jam towards and finish up at. But I thought the way that they did it was just sick and mature and very organic. And if it was pre-planned in someone's head, I had no idea. It felt very much of the moment.
It was marvelous. It really was. I mean, the electric piano, there's a descending line at about 22 minutes, but it's like, this sublime is really cool, and how they get back into it. Talked about kind of the hard rock riff at the beginning of the jam. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. This seems like it's in 3-4. And then I was like, oh, wait, I think Here and Now is actually in 3-4. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. But time signatures was totally a theme this set of shows, or even this year in total. Like, Jake's really been playing with the time signatures. Not that they were playing with them here, as I just mentioned, but in general, like, the time signatures were interesting. And I feel like getting back into Here and Now at the end of this jam, it really drew your attention because of the way that time signature was kind of moving and the way the band was gelling together to kind of get back into that riff.
Huh.
And Jake has this moment of did it, did it. And I remember it so clearly because in the moment it just like logged itself in my brain. And so every time I listen to this jam, I'm like, there's that moment, you know? The two jams, Sweat Equity and Here Now, kind of comparing themselves or contrasting themselves. It was, you know, basically almost an hour of music here we've been experiencing in the room. And then we get into Evergreen, which I kind of have an inside joke about Evergreen, which is it starts out as like a breather song. And by the end, you're like moshing. It's so intense. You know what I mean? You're jumping up and down because it really builds to a peak every single time. And you're like, wait a sec. This is Evergreen, right? Like, because it starts out so quietly.
Yeah, I mean, when that is your breather in a four song just monster set here, like, you know, things are going very intensely. Kiss from a Rose, which I should probably check the stats. I obviously remember them playing it in the Midwest in October in 2023, partly because I did an episode about that with Josh Carver, and we fawned all over how they moved into Kiss from a Rose. But man, it really goes places. And like I was saying before, a similar maybe three-part structure to Here and Now, in that it's like a flex early, and then we hit a groove, and then we get into some very complex melodic work that I can't wait to talk about. But I'm assuming that these are pretty hardcore Eggy fans who are at Nectar's, but maybe there are some casual folks there. How did the crowd who maybe didn't know about Eggy's Kiss from a Rose history, like, was there a reaction? Was it like, oh my gosh, these guys will cover anybody?
I think it was a little bit of the latter. I think it's one of those songs. I remember when I heard it for the first time of them, you know, or read it on a set list, like you were just saying, I was like, oh wow, I haven't heard that song in a really, really long time, but it's so like burned into my memory, you know, from the 90s. Uh-huh. And kind of the same thing happened in this moment where I think everyone in the room was like, oh yeah, like even if you knew that they play it, it was a surprise. It was amazing how quickly we got into like, wait, what song are we in again? Like, you know, how quickly again, it was like, okay, like, wow, this set doesn't quit. It just, they're just going and going and going and going.
Yeah. Jake and Alex are like having a musical flex off around 7 minutes. It feels like, so they've really departed from yeah. You know, the original material. Jake has been playing at times this year and probably in the past this little circular kind of almost like Daniel Donato-esque or like from the song Fish Song Glide or Gaiuti, where it's this very like circular little pattern.
Thank you.
another pivot around 10 minutes. And as I mentioned, the mid part here, just a nice groove. I really like the staccato clav work by Donnie. And we're in it pretty deep. Midsection of this jam around 13, 14 minutes. I wanted to highlight Mike, who certainly with the song that we'll talk about more in night two at Nectars, but his ability to be the bedrock and be the foundation while never being repetitive and never being boring, I think is something that probably goes under the radar.
Again, I'm not trying to get outside my lane insofar as my music theory knowledge here, but I'm pretty sure they were jamming in 11 there in the middle, and because I was tapping on my on my leg in the room going, are they playing it, because it you kind of miss a beat, right? Like, and I was reminded of there's a section of a legendary Genesis song called Supper's Ready, which any Genesis fan worth their salt should know from back front to back. But the middle end of that called Apocalypse in 9-8, as you would expect, and this felt like Apocalypse in 11-8. Jake was just like, I mean, he was just destroying his guitar, the level of energy that was going into that thing, especially again like several hours into the night. But then it evolved into this cool, this like funk breakdown. And I wrote down it like Corey Wong would be proud of this funk breakdown, who they obviously just collaborated with on right. Jam Cruise. It reminds me also of the Perm show about some of the funk that was going on there. I was like, Corey Wong would be proud of it. You mentioned the Donato thing, like kind of, I described them as variants on a melody where he kind of is going around the circle of, there's a way I can play this way. Oh, there's a way I can play this way. And until they land on something, and that is a thing that I've seen him do from time to time, and it's very engaging, like in the moment, to be like kind of focused on, okay, where's this going? It's almost like watching, I don't know, someone play Tetris or something. You're like, you're watching Tetris. There's a bit of tension. Like, how does it land here? You got rid of, you landed that one, and it's kind of the same thing. You want to see where these things land. And then there's, I think they tease Ruben and Therese right here as well. Came into that lick, which turned into like a bit of a prog funk situation, which I'm totally here for. I mean, I just talked about Genesis and Corey Wong in the same breath. Here for the prog funk.
Yeah, the Venn diagram is you and a whole lot of other people, but I thought it was just masterful how they incorporated the Ruben and Therese theme back into the jam, like around 17 minutes, 30 seconds. And then on top of that, it felt to me like the little descending motif was a Mind Left Body jam, right around 19 minutes and 30 seconds. So we've got Kiss from a Rose. We're referencing Ruben and Therese. We're incorporating Mind Left Body jam into that. And then a return to Kiss from a Rose around 21 minutes and 30 seconds. It's like, this is crazy. This is just bananas. And then, as you mentioned, the encore, Zugzwang, just goes hard, celebratorily wails. So there are literally no wasted moments in night one. You must have been feeling pretty good about your decision to drive up to Burlington.
Yeah. Completely. And I want to call out the, you know, we talk about, you know, roaming reporter being in the room, the applause, the ovation at the, after Alex sings that line, when they go back into Kistrom Road, he sings the line and then he pauses. And then the crowd, like the crowd went nuts. Like it was a really cool moment, really memorable. Like, wow, you know, it kind of, and it kind of summed up, not just wow, that jam was cool, but like, let's clap for the last 3 hours of music, you know, like, or 3 hours of time or whatever, however you want to phrase it. Like it was a breath going, whoa, we just basically played, at least for this set, like an hour and a half, right? It's just like, what's happening, you know? There was 6 tapers at the show.
A lot of sources for me to choose from. Obviously, I'm using your tape, which sounds phenomenal, but that's so great to hear. I mean, a forest of microphones in the back of the room.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And you know, a couple guys that you know, I'm fortunate to see shows with regularly, and a couple of guys who I hadn't met, and at least one from out of town, which was really cool, who come up for the show. So I actually did something a little different in the room because there were so many people taping. I was like, I thought I'd try something different. And that was a cool experiment. But also, just more generally speaking, for this whole like run, you know, and even the whole year, like the amount of taping has really been amazing to see. So thank you to all of you who are doing that and sharing so quickly, because it's so awesome to be able to get to, you know, hear these shows often the day after. And if anyone's interested in getting into taping, I only got into taping when I started seeing Eggy, you know, a couple of years ago. So I basically got into it to tape this band. I'd always wanted to get into it, and it's been a fun kind of hobby to get into. So if anyone is ever interested, just hit me up. I'll give you the rundown.
That's awesome. And that's very generous, and still something that, you know, in certain parts of the country, we do have to wait a few days for the soundboards to hit Nugs, but it's been really refreshing as they've jaunted through the Northeast in the last week or two to basically know, hey, I can wake up and check the archive.org or the ReListen app, and boom, I've got some great sounding odds to listen to days before the soundboards hit. So it's very cool. So thanks to you, and thanks to all the tapers. Let's get into night 2 at Nectar's. Set 1, I didn't take too many notes on Apology, High Noon, Nearly Always Late, and Benny and the Jets. All great.
Benny did get the crowd going, I got to say. Yeah, that thumping intro, you know, and people were really singing along. It was a cool thing.
Hux with it, and you were the one online who finally officially got the answer correct. Sometimes it's Hux, sometimes it's Hux with a footnote, and the footnote is with it. But now we know from the band that means what? Just has a little extra jam sauce on it when it's Hux with it?
What do they say? A little extra mustard.
Nice.
Well, that's what I say. They didn't say that, but that's the term that I like to use for it. Get a little extra mustard on it, you know.
And we were able, we have me and Brian Wolf, who was a guest on episode 3. We've heard instead of the hidden cause behind the effect, the Theo Cosby behind the effect. And that's something that we've nerdily wondered about. And I did get RJ from Osiris to ask the band when he was doing the Q&A. So it's off microphone. And indeed, Jake is singing Theo Cosby in parts of Hucks With It. So I thought that it's nice to know that.
Yeah, we're asking the important questions here.
You know. Hucks, now we can send each other Theo Huxtable, Hucks With It, Huxtable, Theo Huxtable pictures whenever they play Hucks With It. And yeah. We appreciate that.
Land on this like two chord riff, which is a bit of like a, gave me a bit of like a 80s power rock Knight Rider vibe. Which evolved into this full-on dance party. And I remember thinking in the room like, oh my god, I can't wait to hear this on tape. And it was one of those moments that actually was a lot more intense and communal in the room than it ended up on the tape. Like this jam and the way it was, like that kind of bouncing feel, and everyone's really very high tempo. I think that's another theme of these two shows, is like a lot of the jams are quite high tempo. My notes say in all caps, full on dance party. So that's what it was. I'm sticking to it.
Tiny Miracles was very nice. A little circular percussive Jake around 5 or 6 minutes. I thought Donnie kind of had a nice imitation of that on keys, which is always great when we get that little bit of interaction. Just a nice shreddy finish. Great cymbal crashes by Alex. I mean, you know, 11 minutes and bada bing, bada boom. We've been a few places. So
yeah,
that was a very nice way to wrap set one.
It was a very tight set. And the at the end of that Tiny Miracle, like you said, there was some shredding and Jake kicked on the, I need to go back and figure out, you know, nerdily figure out what pedal this is, but whatever it is that does that like synth sound that is most commonly associated with Northern Lights,
that's right.
Every time that thing gets triggered, it's like getting thumped in the chest, but like in a positive way where you're like, whoa, there it is, like,
yeah,
like it's on, you know,
instantly recognizable. That tone, yeah, is so unique,
like,
and
whistling, yeah, like it just sounds amazing, and it just takes that next, it takes everything to that next level. You know, it's kind of reserved for those moments. And you can tell that I have, like, I really, really love this, because I think last time we talked, I mentioned it.
I heard it. I always think about you when I do hear him dip into that sound. So yeah. I was thinking it.
And now when they play you, I'm always like, oh, is he going to do it again in this little solo? You know, like he did back in January. And it's just these cool little things, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a great... was the great end of the set.
Something I'm interested to get your opinion on as we get into set two, 12 Pounds of Pain. Thought it was great. This is an example of the Chase Bliss mood pedal. I feel like getting more and more subtle and more incorporated into the overall kind of sonic landscape, which has been a theme since it was introduced last year. Like Donnie is right there on piano as Jake is getting into those sounds.
It felt like that combination of the keys and the guitar was really noticeable. It was like two sides of a coin. Like the keys were like providing a bed, like a firm bed, firm mattress, I guess, for the loops to kind of jump up and down on top of that. And then the peak was more of like a water bubbling over kind of peak, right? In a more subtle kind of way. But yeah, I love that delay. It's so distinct. And when it's kind of woven into the jam like that, it's very captivating.
Really seems to be something that we're getting more and more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Next big jam, Lost and Found, and like Here and Now and Kiss from a Rose in set two of night one. I kind of, as I was listening, sort of identified three parts here where we're rocking early, get a little darker in the middle, and then we go for the pretty kind of melodic finish to the jam. I do have to acknowledge, I feel like Stone Temple Pilots' Interstate Love Song. Are you familiar?
Oh, yeah. Love that song.
Lost and Found has some similar DNA with Interstate Love Song. At least
with those open E's. Yeah.
Yeah. See, you are a music mind. You actually know why that they sound similar.
Absolutely love this song. This is one of the songs that just totally brought me in to this band. Just a combination of like the songwriting, but also the kind of proggy composed stuff in the middle, and like trying to listen to it over and over and kind of work out like how the repeating parts fit together. And then when I finally figured it out, I'm like at the show saying, this is what's going to happen. I feel like it's pretty rare in the second set. I could be wrong, but I also feel like it's definitely not like a super common jam vehicle. And especially at this stage in the show, I was like pleasantly surprised when it's like, okay, left turn. We're not going to go into the melodic kind of soaring part of the composed part of the song yet. I'd actually have my like camera ready to go. I'm like, oh, I really want to capture this, instead I captured the beginning of what was ended up being a marvelous jam. And again, another example of this rapid iteration on a theme that Jake's been doing.
Mm-hmm.
He starts with that kind of power rock riff, and then starts exploring that. I was really focused on this. It was cool to see him move across the fretboard through these different permutations until he landed on this harmonic, like playing with harmonics. It makes it so angular sounding and super resonant. it seemed like, okay, are we going to go kind of straight back into the end of the song, which obviously did eventually happen, but there was like a little middle section that was kind of cool, around 15 minutes.
Yeah, I definitely identified that, and like it gets a little plucky, a little staccato, where they're mm-hmm. kind of figuring out, okay, what are we going to do here? I thought maybe I heard a little like When the Saints Go Marching In sort of a vibe as we try mm-hmm. to get our footing. And then that leads into that third section, which was just beautiful. Serene guitar after 18 minutes from Jake, very twinkly, Donnie sort of accompaniment. I thought that Mike's rhythmic support around the 20-minute mark, as Alex was just crashing and crashing and crashing, were really great. It's just kind of goosebump worthy as they explore the last couple of minutes and then before they get back into the lost and found. But these guys are getting really good at anthemic sort of finales to these big, long 20, 25 minute jams. It's definitely something that it's always welcome. And that just sounded so, so good. I guess this was maybe one of the first times since the February 17th Covington, You Can Call Me Al. Jams, or it's this big jam that's going a lot of places, and then it kind of finishes on this sort of very pretty note. Mm-hmm. So yeah, mm-hmm. It was all about it.
Yeah, totally all about it.
Next up, Atomic Age. Al, you're the guy who knows more about Iggy than I think probably anyone that I talk to on a regular basis. This was a debut. Did you know what they were playing? Were you like, what is this? How were your thoughts processing this debut?
I was definitely having a mild panic for sure. Going, what's going on? What's happening? Which I have to get over very quickly because then, you know, you really want to focus on what's going on. This is a really interesting tune. In the time since it was debuted, which wasn't even 2 weeks ago, I feel like, I mean, the number of people that I've talked to that are like, this song has been stuck in my head for a week.
I'm one of those people.
Such a cool song, such an earworm, so many different things going on in it, and also like a different style, right, than some of the songs. Like nothing immediately comes to mind of like, oh, this, you know, this falls in a similar bucket as another original. Like it definitely kind of stands on its own. So yeah, it was really exciting, and I was very eager after the show to kind of suss out okay, what's the deal with this, and luckily someone had a set list sitting right there on the table for a moment, and I was like, there it is, okay, cool.
So great. And yeah, I mean, they play Atomic Age, you know, 4 out of 5 shows between Nectars. Right. They skip it in Portland, but then we got it in DC where it went 20 minutes. In Ardmore, it was great. They played it at Brooklyn Bowl for Purim. So That's, yeah, I guess all Aggie fans are going through that experience as we record this pod. Like, oh, it's been like 2 weeks and I can't get it. Especially Mike's thumping and steady bass figure, that whole song practically. It really showcases his ability to, you know, be that foundational piece, but it never feels like it's a rote repetition.
No, and I think that like that drop beat thing helped with that a little bit, because it kind of keeps you on your toes, like, oh, what's going on? Gives it a bit more tension, right? And forgive me, I know this is a podcast about Eggy Jams. We can talk about Eggy songs from time to time as well, I suppose. the chorus, like, just totally rocking, you know, really cool vibe. And that if you just listen to all those the versions, those four versions, I suppose it is, like, the amount of swagger, I guess is the word I would use, like, especially in that Brooklyn Bowl version, kind of, I guess it goes both ways, because you've got the band who's excited about it, but I feel like it's a certain group of the audience of like, yeah, like, let's, you know, let's do this. The kind of mutual excitement there is so cool to see, you know.
Is it you on the odd yelling thank you at the end of the jam as we transition back to the lyrics? Because it's a guy with a bit of an English accent who's near the taping section. It sounds like it could be.
It's not me, and I have nothing more to say on that topic.
Okay. All right. we'll take you at your word.
Let me put it this way. One of the things about taping is you're capturing the sound in the room. And you don't have any control over the sound in the room. And that's, you know, for better and for worse, right? You're giving, if you want to listen to what it sounded like in the room, listen to a tape. And that's what it sounded like in the room. Level of excitement that was clearly being directed towards the band at these two shows was noticeably different than when I saw the band in June. And I chatted to a few people who had been at those shows too, and it was like, whoa, like, this is and it was two nights, you know, and that's not to say at all that previous experience wasn't, you know, it was super high energy too. I remember having the same feeling of like, oh my god, it's so hot in here. The number of people who basically, you know, either yelling thank you or at least kind of evoking that thought or that experience was really cool to see, for sure.
I mean, to summarize, the energy and the crowd enthusiasm, palpable, was there last summer when you saw a show at Nectar's, but even more so this go around. And it seems like that trajectory is just headed in that upwards direction. I find myself, and I think you do as well, you know, talking to more and more folks online about specific Eggy jams and shows and songs, and it's just kind of an exciting time. Rest of set two, Finding and Losing, that was great. I feel like I heard some Who inspired guitar playing.
I had that in my notes, those big chords. I was like, where'd that come from? Like, yeah. Whoa, that's cool. Yeah.
A real flex between the muscular bass and the drums and this mid-tempo marching groove that kind of went for a few minutes. Yeah, a little minor key, hard rocking finish before they seamlessly went back into Finding and Losing. So another 20-minute jam. And if they're not careful, they're going to play like a 40-minute jam sooner rather than later if they keep this up. These jams are getting big and big and numerous, which is the way we like them.
Yeah, for sure. No, the number of I'll have to run the stats, but I do feel like the number of like 20 plus minute jams has, like, percentage wise, has kind of ticked up a bit.
Yeah.
And especially the number per show.
Right.
The previous show had four over 20, probably over 23, and then like the next show, the two, maybe two, and then a few that are a little bit shorter. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, and they come strong with the encore. I thought that smile was superb. I heard Jake building off of like what sounded to my ears like a taped little loop that he did. Did he sample himself and then it felt like he was playing over it? And if he's done that before, maybe I just haven't noticed, but I thought that was really, really, really cool.
It's definitely kind of developed as a bit of a motif, I guess, is the way that they jammed that out. It was very noticeable. There's been a couple moments where the looping gets really quiet and then gets louder, and the way the band plays with the loops can be different. And this particular version, they built back up to the peak, and I was kind of paying attention and watching. I think there was some talk on the top back mic to kind of arrange this a little bit instead of previous versions where it's more of a big entrance on the one. This is more of a buildup and then a big entrance on the one, which had a little bit of a different dynamic feel. But yeah, we were jumping up and down, and you know, smile at the end as the show closes. It's absolutely ripping. I'm very interested to hear what that one sounds like in the studio.
Yeah,
because I love the proggy stuff, and that's like proggy and poppy at the same time. It's a really cool combination.
Right, jam band fan base. You know, clamors for jam band to release studio album. Not something that you hear all the time.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's a great point. And from what we've heard from the single that's been released, the sound and the production and stuff, you know, is very distinct, right? And very considered. I'm excited about it. I'm sure the band's excited about it. There was a little bit of there was some talk with RJ, like you were mentioning, but he was kind of poking the band funnily about, hey, when's it going to come out? And I definitely get the sense of like the band wants the album to come out. You know, they recorded it last April, you know.
They're ready.
We're all ready, and that time will come when it comes, and I'm hugely looking forward to it. And then to your point about Atomic Age, the sense that I get is, so there's been a couple of new songs that have come out in the last couple months. That one, What I Know, is a great new song. And then obviously Sweat Equity. The sense that I get is those songs are like next album songs.
Okay.
I think, you know, there was an Instagram Q&A, the same one where I was, you know, we were asking the tough questions about Huck, someone asked a really great question, which is like, hey, what are your goals? You know, where do you want to go? I'm like, oh, that's cool. And one of the things Jake mentioned was, you know, getting this album we were just talking about out, but also starting work on the next album. And I think there was another mention that just generally like wanted to have a good cadence on album releases, which I really look forward to.
Yeah, same here. Looking definitely excited to hear that when it comes out. Great couple of shows all the way up at Nectar's. Did you have gravy fries? Is that still a thing? I would have. I love gravy fries.
It is still a thing. This time, I didn't have gravy fries. I had regular fries, which was, I'm just full of regret. I should have had gravy fries. But I can actually vouch for the salad, the chopped salad at Nectar's. Maybe not everyone, you know, what you would think of, but I got to say, that's what I'm getting next time I go back.
All right.
I ran into someone at a coffee shop the next morning, and we were talking about the show, and he said, oh, you know, tonight will be the last time that you see Eggy at Nectar's. And I was like, oh, wow, I didn't think about it that way, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, that may or may not be the case. Maybe there'll be another two night run or even a three night run at some point. I know some bands have done that, but that was an interesting thing to think about. It really got my in my noggin thinking, oh, I really like seeing them at Nectus, but you know, I'm sure it'll be great to see them wherever.
Yeah, for sure. The benefits of a growing band. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about these shows. And again, can't thank you enough for taping, and thanks to all the tapers out there. I'm excited. Aggie has 9 shows on the books in April, including one here in Las Vegas. It's after Fish's Night One Sphere show. So I'm really pumped to head to our Las Vegas version of Brooklyn Bowl to see Aggie in person. We've got 6 shows coming in May and summer tour. Or summer festival season, I should say. Hopefully there's some touring dates that come out in addition to some of the festival sets. And looking forward to documenting all the big jams here on Vice or Virtue. Al, my next episode is going to be with Brian Brinkman from HF Pod and Osiris This and Beyond the Pond and Osiris That. But we are going to talk about some of the big jams from like late April through May of 2023, just a period as they were working across the South with maybe some gems that people who are, you know, getting more excited about Aggie the last several months may have missed out on. So that's what's coming down the pike for me, but always a pleasure to have you on Vice or Virtue. And thanks so much for your expertise.
Anytime. This has been great. And I'm looking forward to listening to that episode and revisiting some of those shows from last year. I think that's a great idea. And I look forward to, I don't know, are you going to be the guest? Do you need a host for your show after you see the band in April? I'm happy to oblige if you'd
thank
like,
you.
Or, you know.
So we'll have to figure that out, ask and answer the questions. Sit on the other side of the Zoom screen here. Really excited to catch some live Aggie. Exciting time to be an Aggie fan. But thanks everyone for listening. You know the deal. You can subscribe, leave a review, blah, 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 blah. Just tell your friend who likes Aggie about this podcast. And we'll see you for the next episode. Thanks everyone for listening.
Just there.